Hello.
Thank you for going to the Les Schwab Twires.
Twires?
I don't know.
Hello. We appreciate you going to the Les Schwab.
Why can't you say tires?
Vive Clicquot. It's the same
thing. Just say tires.
Where do we pick up from?
Hi, everyone. You're listening to the Sinner and the Saint podcast. I'm Luke Anderson.
I'm Will Darkins, and this is sponsored by Les Schwab Tires. Is that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yep. Enjoy.
Doing the right thing since 1952.
The Sinner and the Saint, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of men who do not exist. Luke Anderson, a young loner on a crusade to champion the cause of the innocent, the helpless, the powerless, and men 25 to 54 with a median household income of $78,000 per year.
Now, there is one exception to that.
No one cares.
Shh, watch your mouth.
Will Darkins, a disappointing Oregon State fullback with a receding hairline, desperately trying to hold on to the past.
Don't mind that I'm just kind of sitting there looking in his face. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
The Sinner and the Saint Tailgate Show, powered by Frost Brewed Coors Light, a brilliant, imaginative, unrestrained exercise or display.
I'm pleased that you're pleased. Believe it, I'm pleased.
On 1080, The Fan.
Hey, kids, it's hour two of The Sinner and the Saint. We made it through hour one, and I think maybe the best hour of radio that we've ever done or anyone's ever done.
It's a hot take.
Or anyone's ever done.
That's what we do on this show. Hot takes, samurai swords, and peel outs.
If you'd like to verify, confirm, re-listen, or listen to the first time, hour one, go to 1080thefan.com and download the Les Schwab Tires podcast. Just go to listen on demand and you can hear us there. As for hour two, we will get to more college football. We'll make our picks. We've got World Series recap. A lot going on in the NFL, but we start with the Blazers. And the way we start with the Blazers is reading a text that came over the Bridgeport Beers text line 55305. This is from Brent, and this is referring to the way that you referred to the Blazers. The Portland Trail Blazers are often called by Will Darkins the Zers.
They're my Zers. They're the Zers.
This is from Brent.
Yeah, let's hear it, Brent.
What the hell is a Zer? No one says Zers. Are the Zers playing the Dur in the Duh Center? Am I listening to the Ner and the Ain't?
Which, by the way, we did originally want the show to be called the Ner and the Taint.
Yeah.
That didn't get approved.
No, it did not. The approvals did not come through. The appropriate paperwork was not filed.
They said the paperwork's coming through, but they never got back to us.
Much like the Cleveland Browns, we did not get the paperwork submitted in time.
That's a clerical issue.
So that, that happens.
Here's where I really want to start with the Portland Trail Blazers.
We've already started with the Trail Blazers.
No.
55305, Bridgeport Beers text line.
Yes.
Or at Sinner Saint 1080. On Twitter,
yes.
Do you like Zers as a nickname for the Trailblazers?
I also want to pose the question, do you think that Yusuf Nurkic is right for this team?
Oh, not right at this present moment, not in the right
just
mode.
Right. Is he really a good fit? Now, we're basing everything that we've seen with Yusuf Nurkic
on a 20-game stretch last season where they went 14-6, where he came in, he was out of shape.
Yep.
He had been relegated to the bench and the backup center role in Denver and was traded for one of the Plumleys. I can't remember which one.
Offseason loses 35 pounds, which now a lot of people are speculating maybe he should have kept a little bit of that weight. He looks like he gets pushed around just a tad.
Okay.
Out in the paint. Here's my question. Does it seem like to anybody else that the offense stalls when Nurk has the ball? I remember that 20-game stretch last season where Nurk would get it at the top of the key and he'd start to delegate. I mean, there would be off screens where he'd be able to get it to people inside, and that was great. But now this season, it looks like defenses have kind of figured out what's going on with this Blazers offense once Nurk gets the ball. It's pretty much him at the top of the key deciding where to pass or giving it right back to Dame and going on a screen. And then the other issue I have with Yusuf Nurkic is that every single shot he puts up later in a game, like say in second half, it looks like he's just kind of throwing it up. Like he's not really aiming towards the basket. It looks like he's so worn out at that point, he just kind of goes, There it is.
So what you're saying is you hate Yusuf Nurkic.
No, I love him. What are you talking about?
What happened when CJ wasn't playing when he was suspended for the first game?
They beat the poop out of the Suns.
Maybe it's CJ.
Mm.
Have you considered that?
That was the Suns with Earl Watson, which apparently is the worst NBA team of all time.
They were pretty terrible. They were pretty bad. Earl Watson, like a 3 or 4 game stretch.
How Earl Watson can be the variable in that makes you that terrible, I have no idea. Yeah. He must have been a really bad coach, because now the Suns are actually pretty good. They went on like a 3-game winning streak after he left. It's ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing. It's October basketball. It's early November now, I realize, but most of what they've played, it's October.
Yeah.
There's a long way to go, and this team is going to need to settle in. The other part of it being a 20-game stretch of basketball is that it's a small sample size. It's midseason. You need to get kind of everything flowing. Evan Turner, I think, was out during a lot of that period. You need to figure out how to play with these guys. Right now, I'm not ready to push the panic button on the Blazers. They're fine. Their defense is playing a lot better. I think they were 6th the last time I checked in defense. They're allowing less than 100 points a game. So there's...
Well, and they're 5-4, and that's why I don't want to press the panic button. Sure. I mean, they're in an okay place. It's fine, but I guess as a fan, I'm having that whole experience where my expectations were a lot higher than what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah, and the way they came out of the gate, I think it got everybody a little bit overexcited.
Tight sports pants.
Same thing happened. I hate that term. Same thing with the Ducks. Same things with the Ducks happened. Here's a theory that I heard this week, and I won't tell you who I heard it from, but I will just say that it's an inside source that I have. This is somebody that I know that knows Yusuf Nurkic well.
I really hope this is true.
100% true. I would not lie. He asked me not to use his name, so I will promise that I won't do that. But he not only knows Yusuf Nurkic, he knows his family. And what has happened during the beginning of the season that may be a variable in this is that his girl is in town visiting him. She left on Friday. Watch what happens on Sunday. Nurkic is going to be a man on fire.
That's pretty much just like a surrounding theme for anyone, that like your wife or girlfriend just ruins your life, right?
No, that's not the thing. It's just that his energy is directed elsewhere when she's around.
Shopping,
taking her out to nice dinners. He's making sure that she feels loved.
Boofing?
What's that?
Some boofing?
What's that? So, if Yusuf Nurkic comes out on Sunday, tears up the Thunder, and the Blazers go on a run here, this is why.
It's tearing up something.
Any validity to that in your mind?
I would say no.
Boxers refraining from the old bumping uglies before they go on a fight?
The other part of the Blazers that I want to talk about here.
You're just dismissing this altogether.
Is Al-Farouq Aminu. Out 2 to 3 weeks, my friend.
Yes, he is.
That's a big part of the team. He leads the team, I think, in block shots, which is a really big part to what their perimeter defense has gotten a lot better, is Al-Farouq Aminu. And really, that also kind of surrounds a whole other thing that a lot of people are talking about in Portland, which is, are the Blazers directing too much energy towards their defensive effort? Because they've gotten better defensively, definitely, but there seems to be this lack of energy when it comes to the fourth quarter, where Dame and CJ aren't hitting those late game shots, except for LA. LA was an exception in that one. But other games, I mean, take the, what was the overtime game against the Jazz? They only scored something like 6 or 8 points.
Yeah.
And so when you get that late in games and you can't produce that type of scoring, you have to wonder, is there too much importance being put on D?
Well, no, I think it's that you need to get in shape to play that kind of defense too. This is the first time they're doing it. As much effort as you want to put on it during the preseason, you're not going to be in game shape. And if they can commit to that, they'll, figure out rotations, or they'll figure out just better ways to be in shape, or just playing that way will get you in better shape. And then in late game situations, you'll be able to turn it on a little bit. The other thing too is, one of the ideas early on, and we've seen him do it intermittently and a little bit during the preseason, is having Evan Turner be the primary ball handler in those situations. So now you've got Dame and CJ playing off the ball a little bit more. By the end of the Lakers game, that possession was just Dame dribbling around and then heaving up a shot. And if it doesn't go in, everybody calls that the worst shot that he could have taken.
I know. And against
Utah, yeah. He drives to the lane, tries to shoot a Rudy Gobert, gets it blocked. So that's how they ended up in overtime, right? So you've got the difference in, you know, approaches to that final second shot. And Dame even said it. He goes, well, I, you know, took it to the lane. I got blocked. So I figured I'd just stay outside against the Lakers. Well, that's pretty poor rationale, but again, it went in, so you can justify it.
And I, as a fan, you have that knee-jerk reaction where you have to just trust his shot selection, because I remember, like, the first year he was hitting almost all of those shots. Yeah. And that's because he has fresh legs and he had absolutely no fear of shooting the ball. I think he still has relatively low fear, but I think there's a bit of hesitancy when Damian Lillard comes up the court with the ball as the primary ball handler, and that's because he wants to get everybody else involved. That's great as a point guard, but you have to wonder at a certain point, besides CJ, is the talent warranted enough to actually give them the ball? Like, when Evan Turner's running the offense last year, I was scared as hell because it didn't seem like he knew how to do it. This year, I trust Evan Turner when he has the ball. It's just everybody else, I don't know. Now that Chief's out, you don't really have any outside shooters you can trust. I know Pat Connaughton's gotten a little bit better, but he's not as great as he was in that first Suns game.
Well, yeah, but I mean, and again, it's a very small sample size for Connaughton.
We're only about 10 games in.
Yeah, and he's proved that he could. Well, we're 9 games in. We
said about 10. I love the word about. You can just throw it on anything.
Yeah, you're
about. I just about played in the Rose Bowl.
That's awesome.
That's true, though. That's a very true statement.
Good for you. So the idea that you can have another ball handler and play off the ball a little bit more, that's one of the big advantages that the Golden State Warriors have, and the way they've been able to do it is whoever has the ball has a guy on either side of him that he can pass to that is just as dangerous from the behind the three-point line
All those dudes can play point guard, too. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have Draymond bringing the ball up. Now you've got three guys, and Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant that you can pass the ball to. That's what makes you really deadly. And I think it's going to be a long time just getting into this offense, whether it's another 20 games or so, before you really feel comfortable in, you know, late game situations where you don't give the ball to Dame to take it up, because that's what you've done for the last 4 years.
Myers Leonard.
What about him?
He just looks sad with that suit on the sideline.
I don't know. Why do you have to bring him up every time? You're just bringing him up so you can kick him.
Because he's the, what is he? Is he the cold sore or the hangnail of the Blazers?
He's neither. He doesn't have to play. He's a bench player.
Yeah. So he's like the, what is it? The mole that isn't dangerous.
What?
You know what I mean? He's like the mole of the Blazers that it's like, it's there. And you're kind of like, oh, crap. But it's
The beauty mark?
Yeah, it's fine. Well, it's not quite a beauty mark.
But you're saying a mole on the face of the Blazers.
Let's say it's a mole with some hairs coming out.
Yeah, but you trim the hairs and it looks fine.
What is that a metaphor for?
I don't know. How
do you trim those hairs?
Don't play him. Don't let the hairs get in the way of anything. Trim him off, throw him to the end of the bench, put him in a suit. He's fine.
He does look good in a suit.
Seahawks made a big move that will make them more of a potential Super Bowl team than we've thought they were the whole time. Those were good words in order. That is next. Center and Saint, 1080 The Fan.
You look at them, and they look at you.
A little Mark Knopfler there for you.
I love the ballyhoo girl.
Mark?
She don't care.
What's that?
Mark who?
Knopfler. Dire Straits?
Ah, now I know.
Interesting week in the NFL. And none of it has to do with anything on field. I mean, you have the trade deadline, so that's one thing. And you expect to see some moves, but rather interesting. Let's start. Where to start? First, the saddest news of the week, I think, is Deshaun Watson being injured for the season. Non-contact ACL injury. That sucks
because you could really see he was going to be a big product NFL-wise.
Just last week, the game against Seattle was fantastic.
Which I contest is the best game of the NFL season so far. That and the Cowboy-Packer game with Aaron Rodgers' final drive. Those two, yeah. I think, compete for best game of the NFL season
so far. Well, I think what made last week's game so great is you're waiting to see what the Seahawks could do. And yeah. and all year you've seen them, you know, just, they get into that 2-minute offense, then they do just enough to win. But they haven't been in a shootout.
Was this their first real test?
Know what I'm saying, but I think more importantly, listen, Seahawks were involved in the game regardless if it's your team or not. But more importantly, you saw Deshaun Watson prove that he can go and play in these games. I know that they didn't win at the end, and Russell Wilson was the guy that does. But the accolades that they were pouring upon each other and just the admiration you saw between the two teams, and seeing a young guy come in and do that well, and the fact that Bill O'Brien didn't start him from game one is ridiculous. It seems that if you knew he had that talent, but you saw Deshaun Watson do what he did against Alabama and just go out there and play in a shootout. Now, that was Alabama the first time he played and he didn't quite get the win, but that was the most disappointing news, I think, by far this week.
I would say that as well. I think the one thing with Deshaun Watson that really was sad for me was that he's kind of the next generation of quarterback.
I would agree with that.
Him and Dak Prescott and who else would you
Carson
throw
Wentz.
There? Yeah, Carson Wentz. They're the guys who aren't necessarily the middle pack, but they're the way young pack right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right now you have like a power stability.
Well, you've
of
got
like,
Mariota and Jameis Winston, who are third year guys now. You've got Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott, their second year. But to have a rookie come out and do this, it's just good to know. Because the idea that the league is propped up by Aaron Rodgers, who's out for the season as well, and maybe can come back,
which I think was more depressing than the Deshaun Watson thing.
See, I disagree with that, because the other thing that I really liked about Deshaun Watson is how long have we been waiting for the Texans with their great defense and their array of weapons to finally get a freaking quarterback.
It's like
I'm not a Texans fan, but just be good or be terrible. Stop being good enough to get your team in the playoffs with Matt Schaub and Tom freaking Savage, and we're right back there. That's frustrating to me.
The Texans are one of those teams where their ability of play is not, there's no adjective to really attach to it, but just say like, that's the Texans. Like when you think of like the Browns, you're not like, oh, they're so terrible. You go, it's the Browns.
Yeah.
And the Texans, it's like, you see them and you go, yeah, they're going to get in the playoffs. Their defense is amazing,
but
they'll lose.
Yeah. They're just, but this is
the
a
Texans.
Very, it's a very Texans injury.
Very Texans.
Very Texans-y of them. It also reminds me of the Vikings are very much this way as a team. The Bridgewater injury wasn't all that different. It was a much worse injury.
Yeah, they're there too.
But remember, Bradford comes in and he lights up the world to start this year, and then he gets hurt. He goes back and forth, and now they're leading the division because the Packers are down. But yeah, very Texans-y injury. The other thing that was confirmed is that the Browns may be the worst organization in the history of football. Oh man.
Them and Jacksonville are kind of right. But the Jags are doing better now, at least. They're at least showing improvement.
The Jags played for a AFC title when they came into the league. And
was that the 90s?
It was a long time ago.
Was that Mark Brunell?
But since the Browns, and here's the other thing is you go, well, but the Browns did back in the day and they had great. But remember, the Browns became the Baltimore Ravens and then were reinstated into the league in 99 or whatever. Since then, these Browns, the new Browns, are the worst organization in sports.
The Browns are so bad, they fired Bill Belichick.
Yes, but here's the thing that happened this week, if you didn't hear it. So first, Jimmy Garoppolo goes to the 49ers for a second round pick. Well, not to be outdone, the Browns want to get their quarterback, so they offer a second and a third? Is it a second?
Something like that. It might have been a fourth, but yeah, it's two picks, essentially.
So Garoppolo, who is more proven NFL quarterback, the Browns offer more for A.J. McCarron, who is not a proven quarterback, but A.J. McCarron will not be lining up in a Browns uniform because they didn't get their paperwork submitted in time. You have no idea how good Deshaun Kizer is. You don't really know how good A.J. McCarron is, but you didn't get him anyways. You're going to have one of the worst records in the NFL if you even win a game. It's between you and San Francisco right now for the number one overall pick. Are you going to go get a quarterback? You don't know how good Deshaun Kizer is. You're not going to give him enough time. You've benched him now. They just have no idea what they're doing.
Here's my issue with the Browns is that I think if you were to be in a boardroom with them, upper management, I'm talking owners, coaches, executives, all that kind of stuff. Every single year, I imagine every team does this. You get together and you say, what are our goals? What are our realistic goals for this season? And what do we want to see? And what do we want to do? I think the Browns don't have a realistic and specific goal. Here's what I would say. If you could bring in a coach, which, by the way, Hugh Jackson's a very good coach who nobody listens to on the ownership side because he's been trying to get a good quarterback and keep them in, but ownership steps in every time.
Remember, we just went through the list of the new young Deshaun Watson, Dak Prescott, and Carson Wentz all could have been selected by the Browns, and Dak Prescott, who was drafted in the fourth round, could have been drafted by them multiple times.
Yes.
So you had your chance at all of those guys.
I think if you're the Browns, you get into an executive room and you say, how many games did we win this last season? One, two, three, whatever.
Yep.
Let's win one more than that this year. That's it. That's our goal. Our goal is literally to win one more game than we did this last season. And the only reason I say that is because I think that they don't have a process thinking mindset like Saban does at Alabama, where they really take stock in and they really work hard on every single facet of their organization. I think every year they just have this really vague concept of going, hey, we're the Browns and we're going to get as many picks as possible and pick all these young guys and build them up. And then at some point, somewhere down the line, we'll be really, really good, right? It's like the Astros back in.
And we'll get to that in a little bit. But their process is brilliant.
If I was in the Browns management, that's all I would do is just say, I just want to win one more game than I did last year. If you show improvement, people will at least point it out.
I will remind you of one more thing with the Browns before we move on to the Patriots here, because I do want to talk about how I think they did it brilliantly, what they did. But the Browns are paying $15 million to the starting quarterback of the Denver Broncos.
I don't think Brock Osweiler's the starting quarterback right now.
He was named the starter this week after Simeon's pooping. So he's starting this week. He's getting paid $750,000 by the Broncos. He's getting paid $15 million. Brock Osweiler was with them. He let them go. He got paid by the Texans. The Texans traded him away for picks and then comes back. And now he's playing for the Broncos and getting paid $15 million for the Browns.
There's nobody I would rather be than Brock Osweiler right now.
Brilliant. Here's what the Patriots did that was so brilliant. They traded a second-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers. This was basically the last point they could trade him without re-signing him next year, giving him the franchise tag. But they also signed Brian Hoyer.
Yes.
Former Patriots backup quarterback.
Yes.
And the quarterback the 49ers released to make room on the roster for Garoppolo.
Essentially a trade.
But so they went quarterback for quarterback plus a second round pick. Everybody's going, why'd they give such a thing? You don't think that was discussed when they did? Well, who are you going to release from it? Because I'm sure they probably have a practice squad quarterback, or they could have released another roster spot and crept Hoyer as the backup. But nope, they went, well, you know what? We're done with Brian Hoyer. We've got Beathard playing. We'll keep our guy. We'll let you take and pick up Hoyer. And they were able to do it. It made it work well for the 49ers, made it work well, making friends with a new regime in San Francisco. So they've got another trade partner. They don't plan on using their backup quarterback anyway. So I thought it was brilliant.
Well, I think for the Pats, I agree with you, but there's also kind of a sign that the Pats are putting out there, which is, this is it. We're all in at this point. Like, literally, there is no sign of a future, in my opinion, that Bill Belichick has with the Patriots if Tom Brady is not playing.
I think Tom Brady and Belichick walk away together.
Yes.
And but that I think what it is saying, we've got a couple more years. We're gonna keep I'm not saying a few more years. We're playing two, maybe three more. But we're not done with Tom Brady, is what it says.
Because if you're Bill Belichick, I don't know what you do after this to go actually develop a young quarterback. You're not going to get another quarterback. Say if Brady blows his ACL this season or next season, who do you have to back that up?
Yeah, but if you've got the 49ers second round pick, it's going to be essentially a first round pick. You're going to pick around 34.
Sam Darnold?
I'm just saying, you're going to be able to get another Garoppolo, put him on a rookie contract, have him sit there for a while if you choose to do so. But I'd be very surprised if you see Bill Belichick coach a young quarterback after Brady leaves. That I would agree with. You mentioned it there a little bit. The Astros are a team that 4 years ago was the worst team in baseball, and they just won the World Series. They put together a system, and it worked. We'll discuss that next. Center and St. 1080 The Fan. First news.
Welcome back, kids.
Yeah.
Center and St.
Yeah.
Oh.
You and I were saying this is a Coors Light and Mountain Dew song.
For sure, but not like Coors Light or Mountain Dew song.
No, it's
Coors Light and.
Yep.
I want to make sure that
whether it's you're drinking the beer and then pulling with the dew because you can't stand the light, or just both together.
It's like a pitcher of both. Like, yeah, you get like your solo cup and you dump both in and then you go. And,
yeah.
Or your funnel. Probably a funnel, let's be honest.
Well, you're a mixologist.
It's a funnel and you pour both cans in.
The other one I said was vodka and then pull vodka with a little bit of squirt.
Yeah.
Get some squirt in my mouth.
My brother went to college at Grays Harbor, home of the Chokers.
Go Chokers.
Go Chokers. And I went up to visit him and his basketball playing roommate. They both played on the basketball team.
Did they have suffocating defense?
They did. The Chokers. I see what you did there. So they used to use the funnel for screwdrivers. And you could not walk through their kitchen without your shoes sticking to the floor and staying where they were for the rest of the day. It was the most disgusting kitchen floor.
Not very good mixologist
I've ever seen. Well, it was, I think, the execution of the funnel consumption that was more of the problem. I think the mixing went just fine.
So wait a minute. Were they putting the funnel directly into the mouth? And then
no, they're using the hose, like the beer.
Oh, you mean the beer bong.
But it's not a beer bong if you're drinking screwdrivers.
That's debatable. When does a beer bong become not a beer bong?
When you start pouring other things besides beer in it.
So does it become another type of bong?
Yeah, like a Bloody Mary bong or like a...
Oof.
No?
a hot tomato soup bong?
It's always getting clogged with the olives and the celery sticks. When it works, it's great.
Where the hell's Jimmy? He's in the hospital. Oh my God, what happened? He did the hot tomato soup bong. Sovacus just burnt. Then at the end, they throw bread down there and just stuffing it.
Just picture the Bloody Mary. You wake up in the morning like, oh man, last night I need a Bloody Mary. Just pull out the beer bong.
Is there anything worse than Bloody Mary burps?
Yes. Many things. Have you ever had Thai food and somebody told you, go, hey, stick with the medium. Anything hotter than that is too hot for you. But then you stupidly go, no, I like hot. And then you get the hot and you're eating your pad Thai and you can't even finish it. You end up throwing the whole thing away.
Right.
And then the next morning, it just destroys your anus.
A part of your anatomy.
Yeah.
No, I've never experienced that.
Oh, okay. That is worse than Bloody Mary burps.
Put those together.
Now you've got something that's really terrible.
Hot butt. Bloody Mary burps.
Yeah. So.
The hell are we talking about? Baseball. Oh, World Series.
Baseball. Do you ever watch baseball?
I try not to, but I did this time.
You get roped into the World Series?
I got roped into the World Series Game 7.
Just Game 7?
Because I got roped into World Series Game 7 last year, and it definitely paid off, and I was stoked about that. Not as good of a payoff this year.
This series, though, through and through, was fantastic.
It was a solid series. I'll say that.
It was good. It was great. Game 7, certainly wasn't competitive. You had the run scored early by the Astros. But the really amazing thing is after the World Series, you name your MVP, and it's George Springer.
Mm-hmm.
George Springer was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Not right after the game. Not the next issue. Well, he was. But he was also on the cover in 2014.
Yeah.
And the headline next to the picture of George Springer is Houston Astros, your 2017 World Series champions.
It's eerie.
Super eerie. So if you haven't seen it, you can go online, just type it in. They'll pull it up 1,000 different ways. But basically, there was a story written going, the Astros have a plan, and I think it's going to work. They're building their farm system. They're loading up with young talent. And yes, they're the worst team in baseball right now, but just watch. They're not just using advanced analytics. They're also using the methods that proved to work in baseball for years, where they're getting guys with personalities, guys that have the confidence to go out there.
Some yes, eye test stuff. Yeah.
Jose Altuve may not have the measurements of, you know, an MVP candidate, but at 5 foot nothing, we think this guy's going to be great. Carlos Correa on the other side. And they just, the way they're building the team, and the article goes, in a few years, this is going to be a team that contends for a World Series. And sure enough, now they've won it. And this is a team that's going to be there for a little while. I don't think it's unrealistic to see them winning two or three World Series over the next 5 years.
I can imagine this being a really good thing for baseball. And I think this is what's been missing in baseball, is that you have that type of dynasty, or you have that type of team that as a country, everybody can start to kind of rally around and say, like, hey, those are the guys that are either the heroes or the villains in this league. As much as I don't like the Golden State Warriors, and I don't think a lot of people like the Golden State Warriors, they serve a purpose as the villain for all of us to say, hey, when they come to town, we really got to turn it on against them. I think it's great for baseball because it's lacking so many personalities. Why not draw a personality with this Houston Astros team? I mean, you had one of the players propose to his girlfriend, right?
Yeah, Carlos Correa and his girlfriend, Miss Texas.
Like,
oh, yeah. If you've got a Google machine, I want to check out
Miss Texas,
that young lady as well.
What do you have to do to win Miss Texas?
Be smoking hot.
Like slather some ribs and barbecue sauce and bikini.
I'm sorry. Are you not familiar with the talent in Texas?
By talent, do you mean the
beautiful women,
the Texas, aesthetic look of women?
Texas is a place of beauty.
Is there, there's good looking women in Texas is what you're telling me.
Yeah. So are you familiar with the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders?
I have seen them on occasion.
Have you ever seen a crowd shot of any Texas university when they're playing football?
I actually haven't.
Oh, you should probably look for those too. Mm. There are beautiful women in Texas.
Well,
if you did not know, now you know, and go ahead and check out Miss Texas. Can't remember her name. That's weird.
That's not
weird.
A good thing.
That's weird.
I was just thinking it.
The other thing that you have going for baseball right now is you had the Astros in the American League Championship Series playing against the Yankees, who are a young team and have young talent. You have Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez. You've still got some older players on there, but there's going to be a big free agent class coming up after next season, I believe, where you're going to have quite a few people moving to New York to add to that young core that they have.
Yeah.
This was a year early. A lot of people thought for the Yankees to be there. You still have the Cubs, who are a very likable young team. If you can get the Cubs going to back-to-back or going back to the World Series after winning it last year.
And they're
going to
be sustainably good still.
Well, the Indians, the Dodgers, when you start seeing some of the same teams, the difficult thing for baseball, though, and really all sports, it's funny because you look at the way the Astros were built and the way the story was written for, you know, 3 years ago, where you go, all right, this is the blueprint to create a champion. It's not all that different than what Theo Epstein did with the Cubs. Build your young talent, go, and then once you get a core, you can add some free agent pieces around it, bring in a guy like Aroldis Chapman, bring in a guy like Justin Verlander, and that can, you know, put you over the top at the end. The problem is, if anybody else in baseball thinks that they can go and do the same thing and be the worst team in baseball for a couple of years, get enough talent to do it, if everybody does that, it's not going to work. So you can only get away with it once, where now everybody's going to go and try to copy the model. And my fear is that unless people are smart enough to go, hey, we need to come up with something like the Astros did that was totally different than what everybody else is doing, it's not going to work. So I'm afraid that you're going to have a lot of people go into tank mode. So this is where I think the Astros story can actually be bad for baseball, because they were awful.
They were very bad.
And so if everybody decides that they're going to go into tank mode and you have a bunch of haves and a bunch of have-nots, or I'm sorry, a few haves and a bunch of have-nots, then you're going to have a team that is, or a league that's really unbalanced, and the cities right now that are struggling to get viewership aren't going to do anything for their fans. Yeah, it's great that you have the Astros. It's great that you have the Dodgers. But I think that teams need to be really cautious before they try to copy what the Astros did to be successful.
Text from the Bridgeport Beers text line 55305. This is going back to our Texas conversation about good-looking women in the state. Mm-hmm. This is from the 541. Been to Texas a couple times. Something about y'all short shorts and cowboy boots is a guaranteed boxer brief melter. My God.
55305 is the Bridgeport Beers text line. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the women of Texas, feel free to do so.
If you would like to objectify women on our text line.
That's what it's there for. We don't have to read them. You chose to do that.
I did choose to do that.
We are going to make our college football picks. We'll pick a couple NFL games. Crystal Balls is next. Center and Saint, 1080 The Fan. Daniela Rodriguez, Miss Texas, from Sam the Mailman.
Smoking.
We'll put up the Twitter poll. What's the state with the most beautiful women? In your opinion. I will submit Texas, K California, Hawaii, and we'll throw in Oregon, see how it does. I don't think it'll do well. Just going to guess.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
I think you might have. Or, I think Oregon women have their charm.
Put Oregon and Southwest Washington. You can include that since that's our radio reach. But we'll put those as one.
Or maybe we'll just put Vancouver. The Vancouver ladies.
Hey, man, there's some fine ladies over in my neck of the woods.
Let me tell you something. If you go down by the Interpass Bridge connecting Portland to Vancouver, that's where the hot ladies hang out. Yeah. Under the bridge.
I would agree with that. That's hard to dispute. Hey, should we do our picks? We've got a lot of games to pick.
Let's go for it.
Good games today. All right, we'll start with at 12:30 on ABC, number 4 Clemson at number 20 NC State. Clemson is giving 8.5 points.
You're going to have to go for it. Now, is Clemson's quarterback playing yet? Is he off of injury? He's good, right?
Kelly Bryant?
Yeah, is Kelly Bryant playing?
You were supposed to know that.
I didn't know that.
What is wrong with you?
You're acting like I'm a college football expert.
Still favored 8.5 points.
I'm going to take Clemson in this one, even though NC State, I know, has improved quite a bit this season. I like Clemson's chances.
NC State got their doors blown off by Notre Dame last week, and I don't think that this is necessarily the team you want to play as a bounce back. Clemson should have never lost to Syracuse, but I think that was a wake-up call going, you need a full effort from everybody, whether your quarterback's playing or not. I'm going to take Clemson, too. I think they win by at least 2 touchdowns. Moving to 1 o'clock on FS1, it is Bedlam, Oklahoma, number 5, against number 11, Oklahoma State. This is in Stillwater, Oklahoma State giving 1.5 points.
I got to take Oklahoma in this one, and the only reason I take Oklahoma is because I think Baker Mayfield's Heisman hopes really rely on this game. There's still a lot of murkiness about who's the Heisman front-run right now. I know Saquon Barkley was thought to be, but after the Ohio State game and his kind of lackluster performance, it's not exactly clear at this point. So if you can see a really good game out of Baker Mayfield and have his expectations go a little bit higher, I'm going to take Oklahoma.
I'm going to take Oklahoma State, and I'll say the same thing about Mason Rudolph. Early in the season, he was on fire, and he's got a lot of good receivers. So I think if he can go out and have a showing in this matchup where maybe everybody is looking at Baker Mayfield as the guy, I like what Oklahoma State has going, and I think that that Mason Rudolph will be the guy. So,
by the way, Mason Rudolph, great barfly name.
I think it's a pretty good NFL quarterback name.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think it's so bad, but Mason Rudolph, definitely. But I think
for a barfly, like a dude who's always at your bar.
I think Kyle Rudolph is more of a barfly.
Yeah.
The tight end for the Vikings. That name.
Where's Kyle?
Yeah, Kyle. Hey, where's Kyle?
Well, Kyle usually comes in at around 7:30.
But Mason does not. Just maybe a martini barfly.
Ooh.
Mason.
A martini barfly.
Number 19 LSU at number 2 Alabama. That's 5 o'clock on CBS. Alabama 21.5 points.
Where's Mason? Oh, he's getting back from his internship at Harvard. Yeah. Gonna take Alabama, of course. Give me a break.
21.5?
Yeah.
Yeah, LSU can't score any points.
No, they cannot at all. And Ed Orgeron's really starting to look suspect, my friend.
Yeah.
I know that job is a bit of a hot seat for anybody, but Ed Orgeron's really going to have to finish out this season, at least with a couple wins before, he finds himself looking for another job.
At the same time on ABC, you've got number 13, Virginia Tech, at number 10, Miami. Miami is a 2.5-point favorite in this one at home.
This is kind of a trap game, you'd think, for Miami, because Georgia Tech is one of those teams where you have to prepare really.
Virginia Tech.
Or, I'm sorry. Oh, Virginia. I'm so sorry. That's unprofessional of me.
Yeah, well. Listen, when you're an idiot, you can't hide it.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, in that case, I'm going to take Miami. Miami has to get exposed at some point. You think it's going to happen against Clemson, but they're kind of holding on for dear life, and Mark Richt's doing a really good job of turning that program around. When they'll be exposed, again, I think you wait for Clemson, not this game.
I think this is a prove-it game. I actually like Virginia Tech in this one. I just don't think Miami has had that put up or shut up game. Virginia Tech's number 13 for a reason. I'll take the Aggies.
Aggies. Wait, are they an Aggie? Virginia Tech? I thought
Hokies.
They were a bird.
They're
a bird. Yeah. A Hokie's a bird?
Yeah. Hokies. Jeez. We're idiots.
I need to look up a picture of a Hokie.
Do you know what's Stanford's mascot?
It's a tree.
The Cardinal. Not the Cardinals. Idiots.
But the mascot itself is a tree.
It is.
And the students designed the costume. My brother went on a visit there, given this was back in 2004.
It's actually a color, though. It was the cardinal.
Well, yes. Anyways. But we got there, and the coaches were like, all right, here comes our mascot. And we're like, oh, where? And we look behind it, and it just looks like a third-grade costume with a college kid inside of it. We're like, wow, this school's great.
Their band is very much of that same sense of humor.
You go there for the academics.
The reason I asked their mascot, number 21 Stanford, at Wazoo. It's in Pullman. It's at 12:30. It is Stanford with a 1.5-point favorite.
This is kind of one of those ones that's hard to predict because you don't know which Wazoo you're going to get, right? They've been a little bit inconsistent.
When they're at home, they're great. When they're on the road, they're not. They are at home.
They are at home, but at the same time, remember they played at home against Boise State and they nearly lost that game. Mm. I think they were at home. No, yeah, they nearly lost Boise State. Had they lost at home yet?
Nope.
Is that a no?
Nope.
Yeah, that's a hard one for me. That's now, Brett... the running back's playing, right? Bryce.
Love is still questionable.
Hmm. I'm going to take Washington State.
I'll take Wazoo, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me a Coug.
Oregon State at Cal. Cal favored 7 points.
Hmm. I think I'm going to take Oregon State, man. This is the time they break through.
Yeah, I think you're
right.
We
actually usually play pretty well in their stadium.
I think you're right. Listen, they've played really well the last couple weeks, and I don't see why that's going to change. Just don't fumble at the end, dummies.
It's hard to hold on to that.
Oregon at Washington. Washington favored by 17.
Taking Washington all the way. Of course, that's a caveat if Justin Herbert plays, but at the same time, I think Justin Herbert with a few weeks rest and not 100% healthy, that could also be a danger in itself. I'm still taking Washington.
I'm going to paraphrase because I don't think I have it in front of me unless I can find it very quickly.
All right, I do want to hear. What does the coach have to say about his eligibility?
All right, I've got it directly in front of me. Yes. Willie Taggart on Justin Herbert. If he's ready this week, then he will play. And if not, he won't.
Now, what if he is like half ready?
Don't know. I just read the quote. So I'm gonna take Washington in this one as well. I think even with Herbert, I think Washington needs to put the pedal down if they're going to get in the college football playoff, and they know this is a must win. Two NFL games we'll do, and we'll do these very quickly. Falcons at Panthers. Falcons favored by 2.5 on the road.
Give me the Falcons.
I'm going to take the Panthers in this one. Redskins at Seahawks. Seahawks 7.5 at home.
Obviously Seahawks.
Go Hawks. And we did not mention it, but they did pick up a left tackle this week from the Texans. They traded Jeremy Lane for what is his name?
Dwayne Brown.
What?
Dwayne Brown.
Dwayne Brown. So.
And Jeremy Lane failed his physical.
Yep, so that means he'll get a pick back. Beautiful.
How the hell do you fail a physical in the NFL?
You're injured. You have a torn ligament somewhere.
I forgot to work out.
Yeah, he's playing in the NFL. All right, kids. Hey, follow us on Twitter. We've got that new thing going on at SinnerSaint. 1080, and we'll be back next week, 9 to 11 every Saturday, right here on 1080 The Fan. I'm distracted. That's different than forgetting.
You're drunk.
Oh, yeah, that's it.